There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 868, January 18th, 2021. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say Eddie Jordan has free advice for Toto Wolff. Toto Wolff has free advice for George Russell. And Romain Grosjean may be crossing the pond. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Monaco organizers insist it's on. Alpine F1, are they moving too fast? Petter Hansel does it again. We have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And just a quick reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. We know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. How are things on the left coast?
Everything is peachy and dandy. Lovely weather. It's absolutely a delight to live in Northern California.
Very good, sir. Very good. And so, what say you? Shall we start with Eddie Jordan or with Fernando Alonso? Where do we begin?
I like Eddie Jordan. He's always full of BS.
You think so?
Sometimes, yes.
Well, according to him, first of all, he said he has contacts in both sides of the camp, meaning Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton. Plus, he is in regular contact with Bernie. And what was interesting, him saying that Mercedes should show Lewis the door. Wow, pretty impressive, Mr. EJ. Now, this is coming from a guy who himself was shown the door by the manager and lawyer of a rookie who made his Grand Prix debut with his team at Spa in 1991. Now, this thing, you know, Lewis racing or not racing is taking a life of its own. And frankly speaking, what is going on behind closed doors? We, the people of Formula One passion, we can only speculate. And there is a lot of chatter on the interweb about this. But it is strange, the most successful driver in history of Formula One is without a contract. I'm sure there are reasons behind this. And if we are to believe reported rumors, they include more money. And they say money is the root of all evil. Plus, he wants a free Mercedes supercar, cut off team's profit, and say in management decisions. And I don't know how much of this is true or not. And obviously, both parties are not making any comments on this. But I do know one thing. In due course of time, we will find out if Lewis will be racing to new heights or going out on a high like Jackie Stewart and Alain Prost. Lewis himself has expressed concern about millions of people losing their jobs. So it should not surprise him if Mercedes is only willing to pay him what he may consider a minimum wage by his standards at this stage of his career. But you know, we are still talking close to $2 million per month. It will be a shame if he walks away from Formula One, as I would like to see in my lifetime a racing driver with more than 100 Grand Prix wins. What say you on this situation? Will we see him on the season opener in Bahrain or wherever it may be?
I think for sure he'll be on the grid. I think this is a lot of cinema, adding a little drama to Lewis's career and the end of the 2020 season without a contract. There is no way that they're going to say, we'll go ahead and take George and you have a pleasant gardening leave. It's not going to happen. I mean, George would like to see that happen. Bottas probably doesn't want to see that happen, but number two to anybody is still number two, so he doesn't mind. And in the end, Lewis, remember our favorite song? We've only just begun.
Well, you know, his salary is reported to be around $40 million, and I can think of at least one Formula One world champion, double world champion, who will jump in that car for free. And I think I can think of a few other drivers who will jump in that car, because if you are a Nando or a Vettel or a Ricciardo or a Max or a Charles Leclerc, if you get into number 44, you are going to be world champion. The problem now is Mercedes has to lay off thousands of people like all other companies. So if they're looking to cut costs, one can understand that. And I even read a report that this gentleman who is head of Ineos, he has stepped up to say, now this is just reported, you know, rumors, I don't know if it's true, that he is willing to make up for the difference for any shortfall from Mercedes in his salary. So times are interesting, but I agree with you, which I do once in a while, that we will see Lewis Carl Hamilton on the grid at the season opener.
I do have to admit one thing. Toto would never do anything to make Lewis look bad. And if Toto gave that car to George for 2021 and George won the world championship right away, I don't think that would look really good. The optics would really be a little awkward. So I think we're all cool. 44 is back in town. Trust me, this is actually a non-issue.
Well, that's what Bernie Ecclestone thinks, and he quoted as saying that they're doing this just to keep Lewis in the news. And if that's the case, they're doing a very good job.
Bernie's smart.
That he sure is, sir. And talking of Toto on George Russell, the Wolfman wants his future star to get more experience at Williams and learn from mistakes before being invited into the haunted house of Hamilton. Toto said, and I quote, "Winning Formula One championships is about making the least amount of mistakes, and that only comes with routine and experience. We believed in George because there's not many drivers out there that have won junior championships as rookies, especially not in the very competitive GP3 and F2 championships," end of quote. And of course, my dream team for 2022 will be Lewis and Max at Mercedes, but that's not going to happen. And he's very right, man. George Russell, when he won the GP3, I said, okay, good job. Always a good job to win as a rookie. The competition was not as tough as it is sometimes. But when he blew away Lando Norris in F2 in his rookie season and many other drivers, including Nyck de Vries, that was very, very, what you call machismo. And speaking of machismo, of course he will be on the opening round, whether it's Bahrain or wherever else, under a new management of Mr. Davide Brivio, I believe is the name, from Suzuki and previously with Yamaha MotoGP teams, with a lot of experience in managing championship-winning teams. How do you think he will work out with Nando? You know, he's Italian, so he's very passionate. How do you think that chemistry will work between Italian passion and Espanol passion?
It's going to work very good. I mean, let's not forget, Fernando was at Ferrari for a good length of time, won a lot of Grand Prix, was very machismo. So he's ready for the Latino, I want to be más macho kind of attitude.
I was thinking, you know, obviously Cyril Abitbol was behind him getting into Renault, so they must have spent a lot of time together negotiating, wheeling, dealing. And now that he is gone, I'm just curious as to what the environment will be under Davide Brivio, a new manager. You know, who knows, he may just fall in love with Fernando Alonso like you have and think he is the machismo and forget all about Ocon. But I had saw an interesting comment from the CEO of Renault, Mr. Luca De Mio, I believe is the name. And he said he hired this gentleman because Italians have racing in their DNA. Do you expect a race win from Nando this year?
Yes, I do.
I do expect podiums for sure. I do expect a win from Mr. Daniel Ricciardo in the Mercedes-powered McLaren. Anything else in the world of Formula One, sir, before we move on to other issues?
No, not much, except for, you know, the schedule is being moved around and it's going to continue to shake. But everything is good. Everything is calm on the Western Front. Alpine showed us a little tease of their livery. The car looks great.
Yeah, but it's mostly black. But I think that when they present the car in during racing season, I'm expecting it to be some form of blue, the French racing colors.
As Charles de Gaulle would expect it to be that way.
Yes, sir. So we'll see how it goes. Okay, now we move on to ex-F1 drivers Romain Grosjean. IndyCar preseason testing is taking place Monday and Tuesday of this week. Not too far from here, Sebring, only 90 minutes from Tampa. Looks like Grosjean will be racing for Dale Coyne this season. He may sit out the ovals for self-preservation. You know, Monday was a holiday, but I ended up working and I had the option of going to Sebring. But, you know, you cannot meet people you can talk to. But that would have given me some racing fix. But then I decided, you know, I don't want to drive 90 minutes and then be told at the gate you can't come in. So that's the way it is. But hopefully I am planning to attend the Daytona race, Daytona 24 hours, I must clarify, at the end of this month. And then hopefully, you know, do the St. Petersburg race whenever that takes place. Okay, moving on. Grosjean's teammate from past few seasons, Kevin Magnussen, has already announced a full season of IMSA sports car racing in the U.S. with Chip Ganassi Racing. He will be fighting against with his main rival from British F3 many moons and mushy peas ago, Mr. Felipe Nasr. There is no love lost between these two. You mentioned Stefan Peter Hansel, Dakar Rally. History repeats itself. 30 years ago, your homeboy, Stefan Peter Hansel, won the Dakar Rally on a Yamaha bike. This year, he was driving a Mini and won the event. So was Carlos Sainz Sr., who finished third. Man from Qatar, or Qatar as the natives would call it, Nasr Al-Attiyah was second in a Toyota Hilux pickup. Sadly, this year's event also had a fatality. French rider Pierre Charpin died 5 days after crashing during the seventh stage of the rally. He was 52 years old and died while being flown to France from Saudi Arabia. And last year we had two fatalities, so our condolences to his family and friends. Sir, did you watch any more of the final stages and the closing ceremonies at Dakar?
I did. It was exciting. I loved the some of the backdrop, some of the beauty of Saudi Arabia. It was very interesting. Some of the shots, you know, the cinematography was fantastic.
Yes, sir. And the, you know, the mountains and all these, that was very impressive. And, you know, you must have seen a sign there, Amari Sports Organization or something like that. This is headed by, or at least was a few years ago, by a gentleman by the last name of Lagardère. I think the first name is Arnaud Lagardère, and he is the son of Jean-Luc Lagardère, the man who brought Matra into motor racing in the 1960s. So in motor racing, I've seen the more things change, the more they remain the same. So there is always a line of connection that goes back decades and decades. So it's pretty interesting. Okay, sir, more sad news. A gentleman by the name of Jürgen Hubert. He was the man who brought Mercedes back into racing, starting with DTM and Sauber sports car racing, where a young Michael Schumacher was teammate to Heinz-Harald Frentzen and Carl Wendlinger. He passed away a few days ago. He was 81 years old. He graduated from University of Stuttgart with a degree in mechanical engineering. And as I'm sure all our listeners know, Stuttgart is the home base of Mercedes, and he joined the company in 1965 and became chairman in 1989. And there in Stuttgart, they have a very nice Mercedes museum. I went there just to see one car attracted me there, and that was Stirling Moss's 1955 Mille Miglia winning car. So it's a very nice museum, a lot of history there. And if somebody is hanging around Stuttgart, I would highly recommend a trip to the museum. Sir, talking of museum, you've been to the Schlumpf Museum, right?
Of course. I've been to the Schlumpf Museum a number of times simply because it's the greatest of them all.
How far is it from Paris?
It would be a few hours on the auto route. You got to go to Strasbourg, Mulhouse, Cahors. Colmar, excuse me. But it's a great museum. I mean, they have the best Bugatti displays. Of course, Schlumpf was a Bugatti nut. You know, they have the early Citroën Traction Avant, the earliest I've ever seen. It's very impressive. It's a great museum.
Well, you know, hopefully, while I'm alive, this damn virus will go away. I am planning a trip to your Shangri-La or touch a few countries in July, if possible, this year. And I want to hit a couple of, museum and Schlumpf Museum very high on the agenda. So we'll see, you know, what we can do here. But the virus must clear. Okay, sir, now this, I don't know how you can handle this. I know you've taken up a lot of interest in NASCAR and Indy cars. Marco Andretti, the legendary driver from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, announced he will not race full-time this season in IndyCar series and will explore other opportunities. In over 200 IndyCar starts, he had 2 wins. He has not won a race since 2011. He will stay in racing on a limited schedule and will race at the Brickyard for Team Pepito. And he's also interested in doing like Trans Am with his cousin Jared Andretti, or sports car racing. So we'll see how it works out. Now, big question is, with Marco and Denica out of IndyCar racing, what is the future of this series that once had M.O. or Nigel Mansell racing against his grandfather? Now, as always, everyone has an opinion on this news. And I was looking at this on Facebook, and a fan had this to say on a Facebook post. I quote, "Finally, the male Danica Patrick is gone," end of quote. You're going to miss him, I assume, Mr. Rogers?
Of course. Marco was so exciting. I was lucky to witness one of his victories at Sonoma Raceway in 2006.
Did you see him get out of the car, run over to Brian Herta and say to him, "Oh man, thank you so much"?
I did see him do that, yes.
That was a famous incident. It was what Brian Herta did, as somebody said, he took one for the team, was almost the same thing, because the corner was so tight. It was on the same par as the Rascas situation with Michael Schumacher. But, you know, we're all humans. We all make mistakes or do silly things, and life goes on. Okay, so now we come to COVID strikes Leclerc. And I'm hoping he will make full and speedy recovery. He is the 5th F1 driver to suffer from COVID in the last 12 months. Previous victims include LCH, Checo, and Lance, who all missed a race or two last season. And then Lando Norris got the virus after the season and is now recovering in Dubai. How is the COVID situation in Cali, sir?
I think there is some relief in sight, but all I do is stay home, hunker down, and eat top ramen.
That's good. Okay, sir, now some good news for everybody. The Trulli train is back on the platform and in the paddock. You know, the UAE Formula 4 Championship started this week. They had the Dubai 24 Hours and a few races in the UAE Formula 4 Championship. Yarno Trulli's son, he won the opening race. So let's see how far this train will pull along. So a lot of young kids, you know, Trulli's son is there. David Schumacher, who is Ralph Schumacher's son, he's there. Emerson Fittipaldi now has grandkids there. So we'll see how it goes. And of course, we wish everybody all the best. Okay, sir, to be or not to be, that's an interesting news item on Crash.net. It talks about drivers who are planning to make a big move, but for one reason or another did not work out. You may recall recently JB, Jenson Button, came out to say he almost rode a prancing horse, but the deal fell off. A contract was drawn up for him to join Ferrari for 2013. When all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed, the 2009 world champion decided to stay at McLaren. So this is from the story, which was very interesting on Crash.net. So I will talk about some other almost happening deals. We shall start with Nick Heidfeld. He raced in Formula 3 as a Mercedes young driver and was told, as he told us in an interview at Sebring a few years ago, that he was pretty much all set to go into Formula One with McLaren, as was mentioned to him by Norbert Hogg. You remember Norbert Hogg, sir?
He was my buddy.
Yes. Quick Nick was in Formula One with the support of Mercedes and McLaren at Sauber. In 2001, he was shown the tour, basically shown up by little Kimi, because Kimi was very, very impressive as a rookie. And that's when Norbert Hogg and Ron Dennis forgot all about Nick and commitments, verbal commitments made to Nick. And this verbal commitment would also come back to haunt Ron Dennis later on. But that's another story. And then they went total gaga on Kimi. But frankly speaking, you know, who can blame them for taking Kimi? The Kimi Raikkonen of McLaren days, for me, was Lewis Hamilton today. Just a very, very fast race-winning machine. But if your car is breaking down every third race, then you're not going to win a lot of races. Next, we come to pole star Robert Kubica. The kid from Krakow, Polonia, raced in karting for the same team that ran Lewis Carl Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. And according to team owner Dino Chiesa, he was as quick as them. And Lewis Hamilton has also mentioned this many times, that among all the drivers he raced, one of the most competitive was Robert. Kubica moved to Formula One with BMW Sauber. After surviving a horrendous crash in Montreal, he won his first and only race at the same place the following year. Robert spent his early years in Italy doing karting, and his manager, I don't remember his name, but he was also Italian. They had cut a deal to join Ferrari, and the whole world was waiting for the first Polish F1 winner. Robert had other ideas, and he went rallying in a small event in Italy, and the rest is history, sad history, I must say. This was a great shame, because Robert was a great racing talent who deserved a lot more success in Formula One. Like Michael Schumacher, he made a heroic comeback, but with injuries he suffered, it was never going to be the same. And talking of Michael Schumacher, you know, it's, I've known this for many years, Michael Schumacher and Norbert Hogg and Ron Dennis had very serious discussion for Michael to join Mercedes, because, you know, Mercedes was the one who paid for his debut with Jordan. But money matters over personal endorsement deals prevented this transfer, according to Mr. Ron Dennis. Then we had Ayrton Senna to Ferrari. According to John Bernard, he was interested in joining Benetton, he being Senna, was interested in joining Benetton in the early 90s when John Bernard was the engineer there, but he told him that the team was not ready for him. And once again, EJ comes into the picture saying he had talks, and I'm sure he's not making this up, saying he had talks with Senna about becoming a driver and part owner at Jordan F1, and that would have been something. And according to Luca di Montezemolo, the biggest regret in racing he has was not signing Ayrton Senna to Ferrari. And finally, there was this pending, everybody was waiting for this transfer, Clark Rogers to US F1. The host with the most had also signed a contract with US F1. But unlike Jose Maria Lopez, who was bringing in $10 million of sponsorship to the team, Mr. Rogers was going to receive $10 million from Ken Anderson, as he also has a lot of zeros in his money market account at Lincoln Savings. For some unknown and yet secret reasons, contract negotiations broke down, and Peter Windsor had to inform Clark Rogers through a text message, "Your services are no longer required." You remember those halcyon days, Mr. Rogers?
I do. I do remember the one photograph of me in the garage as I was anticipating my future career, and just bringing back those memories have made me misty-eyed. And so why don't we take a quick break and let's hear from Gary Sloan.
Hello listeners, my name is Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So Formula One's troubles in Brazil continue with the announcement that the new deal to host the Brazilian race at the iconic Interlagos circuit has been, according to Brazilian newspapers, suspended by a judge. The deal in question wasn't Liberty Media's contract with the new promoter, a company called MC Brazil Motorsports, but the contract between them and the city of Sao Paulo. According to a judge, the facts revealed that without a doubt, the principles of advertising and transparency are being explicitly violated, and for this reason, there's a need to suspend the execution of the contract. Well, it seems Liberty Media were okay doing a deal with MC Brazil Motorsport, a company that was only recently formed, and with, excuse the pun, no track record. This can be explained by the desire on Liberty's part to race in Brazil, but only if they could cut out long-time promoter Tanas Roney. Bad blood existed after Liberty felt stitched up by Roney's ally, Bernie Eccleston, when after purchasing the commercial rights, Liberty subsequently discovered no hosting fee was paid for the Brazilian Grand Prix. Interestingly, it's been revealed that the funding for MC Brazil comes from the Mubadala Group, which is the sovereign wealth fund of the government of the United Arab Emirates. The Mubadala Group are no strangers to F1, as they previously sponsored the Ferrari F1 team back in 2007 after purchasing a 5% stake in Ferrari in 2005 for €114 million, later sold. At the time, Piero Ferrari, who owns 10% of the company, said, "I know Abu Dhabi well. I have the opportunity to meet government representatives, His Highness and his family, and I am therefore happy to welcome them into the Ferrari fold." Well, it seemed like Piero, like many others, ignored the issues of United Arab Emirates' human rights record, pocketed the cash. Mubadala were also instrumental in developing the first ever Ferrari theme park on the Yas Island in 2010, the year after the inaugural Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So have the United Arab Emirates plans for further Formula One investments? Well, firstly, they have the money. And according to Bloomberg, they're planning to deploy capital to double in size to nearly $500 billion in the next decade, a plan that will capital them into the top 10 of the world's sovereign wealth funds. They were one among a few of the sovereign investors last year that seized on the opportunities from a de-escalation in markets caused by the coronavirus pandemic. So countries in the Middle East are increasing their involvement in F1, with Bahrain holding a race and their continued investment in the McLaren team. We have Saudi Arabia through state-owned oil company Aramco sponsoring the championship, and of course they will host their first race in 2021. Waiting in the wings is Qatar with its Losail International FIA Grade 1 circuit, built back in 2004 for $58 million. Qatar were hopeful of a slot in the calendar back in 2016, after Bahrain, who had exclusivity in the region, agreed to the Abu Dhabi race. At the time, Bernie Eccleston, speaking to Reuters, declared, "We asked them, Bahrain, about Abu Dhabi, and they agreed, but they said a third race is probably not the way to go." He added, "I think we've enough races here, don't you?" Bahrain denied this, with circuit boss Sheikh Salaman bin Isaka Al-Khafiti stating, "It's not for us to say, that's for the rights holder." Well, Qatar is serious about sport, witnessed by their winning of the rights to host the Football Cup in 2022. Well, times have moved on with the inclusion of Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait is knocking on the door after spending $162 million in 2017 building the Kuwait Motor Town FIA Grade 1 circuit. So, what could be the next move for Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, or indeed Qatar? Well, all four countries stand accused of using Formula One to sportswash their image. But on the flip side, their citizens are passionate motor racing enthusiasts. Well, the purchase of a team may be on the cards. It would be fair to assume Gene Haas has already regretted his involvement with Dimitri Mazepin after Junior's recent behaviour results in a shitstorm Gene could do without, so he may decide to sell the team after all. The same applies to Sauber owners Lombo Finance, who may decide to cash in their chips due to the uncertainty over Alfa Romeo's involvement from 2020 onwards and the investment required to continue in F1. Haas, the shrewd businessman and dealmaker's Longbow, will understand the deep pockets of the Arab states, would result in a bidding war, forcing the purchase price upwards towards the proverbial an offer you can't refuse. Interesting times in this uncertain world. On a footnote, maybe Cyril Abitbol could get a reference for any team principal position from Reynolds title sponsor, the Dubai-based DP World. Well, that's it for another week. More details in thepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, another outstanding reportage. Nas, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's end on some I don't know if it's a happy or a funny situation. Mayhem at Mercedes. You remember how Rubens Barrichello won his first race?
My favorite way.
Yes. It's never a good scene when there is a disgruntled Mercedes employee, especially after he has left the building. So this is now happening in Spain. A former Mercedes-Benz employee decided to go on a spree of destruction just before the start of the new year. Now, what he did, 38-year-old guy, he used a, according to reports, a front loader to break into a facility and trash about 50 Mercedes-Benz luxury vehicles, causing considerable damage. And this all went down at the Mercedes plant in Vitoria, which is in the middle of the Basque Country in northwestern portion of Viva España. So, I don't know what's going on there, but... Well, maybe this is what Lewis Hamilton should keep in mind, you know, that if he demands a lot of money, more people will go and trash S-Class Mercedes and other beautiful cars with stars.
Yes, either that or storm your local Capitol building.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a very good idea. Yeah. And then steal the laptop of the owner's daughter, right?
And, of course, once you have said laptop, you try to sell it to who?
Oh, well, if you're stealing it from Mercedes, Lexus might be interested.
They could be interested, that's true. Lexus.
How about Lada, car company of Russia?
That's a good idea. I love Lada. A Lada in the morning keeps you bushy and tailed in the evening.
Oh, wow. So what else you want to discuss about motor racing, Mr. Rogers?
Nothing, not that much. Like I said earlier in the show, I thought Alpine was going too fast, maybe in firing Abitbol, bringing in Brivio. I don't know what's going on over there. I know DeMeo, the CEO of Renault, is under a lot of pressure because they have to perform, but their electric car division is doing very well. On the other hand, now we have that new mega car company. And I'm sure you remember the name of it, Stellantis. And that includes Citroën, Peugeot, whatever you want to throw in there. It's like a mélange of white grapes. You just drink whatever is left over.
Yeah, Chrysler, Fiat, Peugeot, Citroën. It's a crowded marketplace, you know. I mean, you just look who is increasing sales and who is not. It's no secret. But you know what I don't understand about, I mean, I like the nostalgia and history of Alpine, obviously, but to bring back, to promote a brand that only sold like 7,000 cars, and these are not $2 million cars, I just don't see how far this can go. And you know, they have other brands in that, Fiat, I mean, jeez.
Renault. Alpine?
No, that's what I'm saying is that what they are pushing with this Alpine, I mean, they don't sell a lot of cars. And the same thing with the Peugeot group, you know. They have so many brands, which brand they will promote, I mean, where they will go. I just don't see just like, you know, when Alfa Romeo relaunched the cars here, remember I said it will be very hard for them to go against BMW and Lexus. You know, these are two very different brands. You know, one is the real bling factor. One is super reliable factor. So I just did not see a marketplace for them. And, you know, they are suffering now. And so I don't know what the agenda with Alpine is. You know, like Nissan sells a lot of Z cars and GTR. The Nissan GTR is very popular all over the world. They want to brand some of those models as Alpine and, you know, sell in major market, US, China. That's another story. But we'll see.
No, I agree completely. I'm totally confused. You're absolutely right. The Alpine A110, I believe they actually originally made 563.5. But apparently, there's always somebody making them somewhere in the deep, deep south of Mexico. But I don't know what's going on. Like you said, Alpine is not a super expensive car. I think it's $75,000. They don't make that many. But this is their concept. They want to bring Alpine to the forefront. because it was always a cult kind of a car. So anyway, we'll see what happens. All I know is Fernando's going to win, and as long as the motor is kicking ass, I don't care about everything else.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think we'll see a first-time Grand Prix winner in 2021?
I do, because I think the schedule is going to be shaken up a little bit. We might still go to a track or two that some of these drivers haven't been to, which always spices it up a little bit. And on the other hand, there are some teams like Alpine, like McLaren, that we're all expecting to see at the front of the spear fighting with LCH and Red Bull. So it's going to be exciting. And don't forget, we've got the big Aston Martin on the grid now, who's supposed to be phenomenal, right? I know they're not supposed to copy the Mercedes, but it's still going to be a facsimile thereof within the rules. I'm telling you, 2021 is going to be one crazy season.
And Honda is making some noises that they're going to go out with a bang with their new engine for 2021. Man, I'll tell you, the way Michael Schumacher's domination was going, nobody thought anybody was going to beat them. But then somebody surprised them all in 2005. And wouldn't it be something if Max can win the world championship against the might of Lewis and Mercedes?
That would be the story of the new decade, as far as I'm concerned. That would be the big one. That would be somebody telling Lewis, maybe you should retire.
Yeah, that'll be something, you know, Max Verstappen winning a world championship with Honda power the year they bailed out. That'll be something.
What about Fernando winning a world championship with Alpine in their first season?
No, as much as I would like to see that happen, I don't think it's going to work out for him. You know, the Mercedes package is very strong, and then Lawrence Stroll will throw all the money he can to bring in all the right people. And I think the team that may surprise everybody apart from Red Bull is McLaren with Daniel Ricciardo. Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen is brute force, okay? Simple as that. But Daniel Ricciardo is his racecraft is, I would say, one of the best. So if these two people have a car that's almost as competitive as Lewis's car, then they can stick it to Lewis, or at least try their very best, and become world champion. But if your package is half a second slower, nothing you can do that will make car number 44 finish second. Unless he tangles with Alexander Albon, but he won't be on the grid this year.
No, and that's interesting that Albon is going to DTM with a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Normally, Red Bull has stuck with, in these type of racing, with Volkswagen-owned brands, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, or whatever. But for the real battle, I'm looking cage rattling, as we like to say here. I am looking forward to is at AlphaTauri between Pierre Gasly, now a race winner, and Mr. Yuki Tsunoda. That should be very, very exciting.
Nasser, that will be very exciting. Fernando is going to be very exciting. Lewis is going to be sort of exciting because he's going to win it all again. But whatever he leaves behind, the little nuggets that Max and Fernando will pick up are going to be fun times to watch. So on that note, Nas, keep up the good work. Gary, an outstanding job this week. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll talk to you next week, and I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you. Bye-bye.